We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that guy over there in the heart of the Midwest. Noted Michigan faithful Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I did marry into both. So my wife obviously is a Michigan alum and fan. My brother-in-law is a Texas alum. So, and my sister-in-law, I guess, my brother-in-law's wife is a Michigan State fan and alum. Like I'm aligning myself with so many winning squads, Ty. I don't know what to do with myself.
You are America is what you're telling
me. That's true. I should also point out, Ty, that, I generally think more people listen to our recap shows when one of our teams loses.
You took the words out of my mouth, man. Absolutely.
And now that we have both of them going down, welcome to everybody who tunes in every so often, because it's great to have you back.
It's great to have you back. Yeah, we're going to be licking our wounds here momentarily as both Oregon and Notre Dame suffer defeat on week five. They weren't the only teams. Obviously, we will talk through a bunch of the other action that went down in college football week five. Before we go any further, the breaking news is this. The Stay Solid t-shirt, the pre-order that we did a few weeks ago, the pre-order that was wildly successful.
Yeah.
We did order some extra units that we are looking to move. We're going to put them back on sale. They will be a little bit more expensive. We weren't lying the first time around. They got to be a little bit more expensive this time around. But if you go on out to our website at solidverbal.com, you will see a big old yellow banner at the top. It's going to be scrolling across the top of the screen. All you got to do is click that link to get on over to the order page. Supplies are limited. So get in there now if you're interested. Pick up another shirt for yourself, for your friends, for other people that you want to make for ballers as well. But go on out to the website. It is solidverbal.com. While you're there, read the articles that we've been posting on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And if you're new to the show and want to find out what we're all about, you can obviously click on the button in the upper right-hand corner and find all the relevant hotspots where you can listen to this here podcast.
We're always incredibly grateful to those who support the show in any way that is appropriate to them individually. But just know, Ty lives a pretty reasonable lifestyle, but I've gotten into tennis and it becomes very expensive in the wintertime in a cold place. And every little bit helps me develop this one-handed backhand that is slowly coming back to life. So keep that in mind as you scope out those shirts or check out verballers.com, whatever is appropriate for your support level.
Verballers.com, again, is our Patreon.
Or just do whatever you want. I don't care.
Do whatever you want. But Verballers.com is a Patreon. It is thriving, especially on game day. We have a lively discussion each and every weekend as games are going down. Folks can also get access to this show and all of our shows a little bit early. And we've got some folks watching this live. This is live on video for a select few premium Verballers who are ever so inclined to join us on this here Sunday after both Oregon and Notre Dame lost, a bunch of other teams as well. I'm about to play for you the reverbs that came through to 408 Verbal One. We had dozens upon dozens upon dozens of calls. Our boy Dylan, big shout out to Dylan. He watched the LSU game, I believe, in person, came home and sent this to me around 4:30 in the morning. So talk about a premium Verballer. Yeah. Kudos to Dylan. Let's play him. Again, these are your week five reverbs. Enjoy.
This is the national narrative. I'm just calling, to be perfectly honest. I don't know what's going on anymore. Georgia's good. Alabama's good. After that, I don't know. What happened to Clemson? I thought I was spot on with that one. Now it's Oregon and Notre Dame and Florida. I just don't look at me anymore.
This is Dominic from Phoenix.
Hey, this is Ray calling from Louisville. Dan, Ty,
Jimmy from Chicago.
Ty, Dan, this is Garrett in Knoxville.
Hey, this is Chad from Kaiser, Oregon.
Hi, this is Austin Peters, a graduate student at Stanford, California. And I have a good question for the Solid Verbal team. Is it ever too old to rush the field? I don't think so. Go Card, great win tonight.
Ducks lost, but you know what? Dan is fine. We want to be 3 or 4. Nobody should.
You know, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Go Ducks.
As we head into October, beware of Werewolf Stanford. 1 week they're merely a man, and the next week they are a beast.
Tell me more about the year of chaos. It looks like it's going to be Alabama, Georgia, followed by Alabama and Georgia.
Does Lane Kiffin have a humility problem?
Can you please tell Lane Kiffin that you can't cook popcorn in a crock pot? Roll Tide.
Question for you. If BYU just stands really, really still, do you think nobody will notice that they're in the top 10?
I just watched my alma mater, Cincinnati Bearcats, absolutely murder the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
I don't know if my understanding of the transitive property of college football or geography is correct, but if it is, Georgia's win over Arkansas makes them the Kings of Texas.
So for the second time in my life, and the very first time with a game in Lexington, the Kentucky Wildcats have beaten the Florida Gators.
Mark Stoops now beat Dan Mullen with Terry Wilson and Will Levis. Will Levis is back, baby!
Ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Breaking news live from the Kroger Field turf. Hell has frozen over yet again. The Kentucky Wildcats are back.
I still don't know what a terrapin is, but we sure shell-shocked them. Go Hawks.
In the car in the parking lot outside Maryland Stadium where I just watched the Terps get a head start on Something's Gotta Give Saturday by deciding that something to give was them. Man, did they just keep on giving.
Badgers? Badgers? We don't need no stinking Badgers!
This year's Michigan team reminds me of the Goosebumps book where this girl wishes to be the best player on her basketball team. And instead of becoming really good, everyone she plays against becomes really bad.
As a Wisconsin fan, I think I'm going to cut all of my apparel in half to represent the aggressive half team that they have become.
Today, we found out Navy runs longer in the fourth quarter than the Gus Bus does. I'll still take it. Go Navy.
So it looks like Pitt has scored more points in the first half against Georgia Tech than Clemson has scored against the entire FBS.
Something's got to give Saturday. Just continues to give more and more chaos.
Ty, Dan, this is Garrett in Knoxville, and I've been waiting years to do this. Here is Tennessee's drive chart. touchdown, 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 field goal, touchdown, down, touchdown, end of game. Go Vol.
What has five W's and no L's? That's right. Whoa, 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 Wake Forest. Let's go Deeks.
Well, I started smoking again. Thanks, Notre Dame offensive line.
Wow, what a powerhouse, huh? That was awesome.
It was. It most certainly was. Like, that was really, it's midseason and they're in midseason form. The Verballers calling into the Reverb line. I love the energy. I love the humor. I love the emotion. What a, like, just A-plus effort from Verballers this week.
So very freaking awesome. 408 Verbal One, kudos to all of you who called in. I know many of you weren't able to make it. Keep trying. We're going to do our best to get everybody featured at some point throughout the course of the year. And again, shout out to our boy Dylan, who shook off his own defeat deep into the night and put together inarguably our best reverbs of the season.
Oh, easily.
That was so good. Thank you. Okay. Where do we want to start, Dan? Look, I think you called it at the top, right? Every time our teams lose, even if it's just one of our two teams, you see a spike in people who stop on by, and I don't know
it's
if they
really
want to
demoralizing.
If they want to share in our collective misery, if they want to grave dance, I don't know what it is. Why don't we start with your number three Oregon Ducks?
That's fine.
And let me peel back the curtain if I could for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on out to our YouTube channel, the Solid Verbal out on YouTube, you posted a reaction video.
Yeah.
You had planned on exactly what you were going to do for that reaction video.
Yep.
When we spoke early on Saturday morning.
Yeah, there was an electricity, or perhaps a lack thereof, in the air about this matchup for me. That there's something about Stanford. The way Oregon has lost to Stanford, when Oregon is excellent, when Oregon is not so good, it is always emphatic and memorable. And you go back a couple years to the C.J. Verdell fumble on, I think it was 4th and short, and the weird, like, Jalen Redd not getting the ball in but hitting the pylon. There were just always weird losses Oregon has had to Stanford, and really impressive victories. But no, there was something about taking a very so-so offense and less than that through the air to a Stanford team that's frankly not all that good. But it still became worrisome to me hours before kickoff. But
you called it. You knew exactly what you were going to do on that video. You could have pre-recorded it, and it would have been the exact same thing. But interestingly enough, I feel like we both were somewhat resolute, maybe not when the microphones were airing, that this was coming for both of our teams. I think we implied as much through the course of however many recordings we've done now since the season started, but we've both sort of felt it was coming. Sooner or later, it was going to happen. Maybe not this week, maybe another week against Virginia Tech.
Sure.
Whoever. But we knew that this was coming, so it wasn't a huge surprise. I don't feel the same sinking feeling that I normally feel after Notre Dame loss, if only because it wasn't entirely unexpected. What was unexpected, though, on the Oregon side, this was a vintage broadcast, Dan. And by vintage, I mean, if you follow Timothy Burke on Twitter, I think he did a good job explaining it. This broadcast was neither in HD nor in SD. It was barely in focus for most of the game. There was a technical reason why. We're technical people. We still didn't fully understand as to why that went down. But just added insult to injury that it was not a pleasant game to watch, both literally or figuratively. Stanford eventually gets the W here in overtime by a 31-24 score. You watched this game way more intently than I did. I sampled it. I tried to get the sense for what was going on. Explain to me exactly how this came about.
We have a lot of games to get through, Ty. We don't need to stay hung up on Oregon Stanford. Okay, I'll be very plain. I'll be very simple about it, because it was obvious to anybody, no matter their rooting interest, watching this game. Oregon's offense is broken with Anthony Brown as the quarterback. Oregon cannot throw the ball downfield. That's a problem if you have aspirations of being a top 10-ish team, which Oregon realistically should and does. Joe Moorhead was not at the game. He fell ill, and it was not COVID, but he fell ill the morning of, and the running backs coach ended up calling the game. That said, It seemed the game plan was fine. It seemed Oregon was down at starting center, down a safety, whatever. Everybody has injuries. Everybody has setbacks. Doesn't matter. There was nothing glaringly obvious about players Oregon missed beyond the receivers that were missed, beyond the tight ends that were missed, beyond the running backs that were missed in the passing game. So Oregon was, they got off the field crazy quickly in the first half. It was an empty shell of an offense. And the worst part of it in that first half was on a very clearly called pitch play at the goal line right before the half, Anthony Brown decided to just keep it for himself and try to run it up the gut and got stopped. Oregon turned that possession into 0 points in a game that was pushed to overtime. So Oregon's first half was the most offensive thing in this game and the reason Oregon lost the game. Now, there were weird calls. There were inconsistent calls at the end of this game. Stanford battled back really well. There was a defensive holding penalty that gave Stanford extra life at the gun with an untimed play that sent the game to overtime. It seemed like an inconsistent way to call the game because that sort of physical play hadn't been called previously all game long going both ways. And so I just spending 4+ hours watching the Oregon offense struggle and then pass it on 2nd and 18 when they're trying to eat clock. It just, the performance all around, spending 4+ hours with Rod Gilmore and Dave Fleming was not my favorite part of my Saturday. Socially, yeah. It was not a, you know, the non-HD, the non-SD, whatever it was, the broadcast itself, the evaluation of the game by the, like, it was a terrible experience. As I tweeted out, Oregon did not deserve to win that game. Oregon didn't win that game. And here we are. The universe is as it should be. And I can't imagine watching that performance in the Oregon coach's room would lead any of those offensive coaches behind closed doors to saying, well, we most certainly think Anthony Brown is the guy to lead this team. It's just, he's a sixth-year guy, and he's making freshman mistakes, and I've heard nothing but good things about him as a person. He's not the answer.
Well, it's striking to me, if only because of the game that he had on the road at Ohio State. Played a great game against Ohio State.
Yeah, and but that was also, it was... It's Burmeister plus, right? You're getting the most out of somebody who can't throw the ball downfield. And it was an incredible game plan, incredible execution of that game plan. But he was missing guys downfield in the Ohio State game, too. That's not why they won that game.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Well, Oregon's going to fall. A nice win for Stanford after, hell, we practically left them for dead early on after the loss to K-State. But it does seem like David Shaw has circled the wagons and got things going in a much, much better direction. So kudos to Stanford. They won this game outright and, exposed some of the deficiencies for Oregon.
Totally.
Let's move on to Notre Dame, which is get it out of the way. Rip off the
Band-Aid,
Dan. Should
we fan swap? Is that a thing we should do?
Fan swap?
Like maybe before our Q&A show, like you are going to be forced to watch the Oregon game and come at it with like unbiased naked eyes and I'll do the same thing for Notre Dame. Like I watch Notre Dame Cincinnati. But should we really like in-depth evaluate each other's teams for the Bruin A, for the Verballers on
We could do that Friday? now that they're not really going to be playing for anything. I think that's fair to do. We could arrange that as a bit
We're
of
gonna
a
fan swap.
As a bit of a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Notre Dame. Cincinnati won 24-13. They were the better team. They were the better team. They deserved to win this game. I thought they got better as the game went on. That combination of Jerome Ford, your boy, and Dez Ritter was too much for Notre Dame to handle. Dez Ritter, I was making jokes that it was 2019 Dez Ritter at the start of that game because he did get off to a rocky start, but he settled in and made some really big throws when it counted down the stretch. And so that combination of Ritter with Ford with a Cincinnati defense that played well, That was what put them over the top in this game. I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, and I saw Mike Golic Jr. was tweeting a lot about this morning, the theme is really one of a cracked foundation. His words, not mine. A cracked foundation. That foundation, of course, being the offensive line. The line was still a problem in this game. And look, we talked about it. It's not the kind of thing where you can just flip a switch and it's going to be all better. It's going to be fine in like a year and a half. They'll be great. Right now, they're out of position. They're injured. Maybe a little bit better in this game. opening up some holes for Kyron Williams. I thought he ran with purpose and looked pretty good for the majority of this football game, but it's still an issue. And the deficiencies up front led to two early interceptions, one by Jack Cohn, the other by Tyler Buchner. And your defense is able to create that kind of pressure on a quarterback, take guys out of rhythm, and you can force some turnovers. And that's what Cincinnati did. They had two very short fields early on that they, you know, used to their advantage. In addition to the line play and the turnovers, which I referenced, there were some dumb penalties, some bad drops. It was really all of that stuff that we've been seeing the trappings of on the Notre Dame side. All of it kind of came out on the field at once. And so it was not a huge surprise. It was a little bit surprising to see so much go wrong. But 24-13 should not come as any great surprise to Notre Dame fans. And the quarterback rotation is another thing. Sure. We can spend an eternity deliberating over the quarterback rotation. Everybody's heard the expression, you have two quarterbacks, you have none. I don't know if I've ever heard that applied to when you have three quarterbacks, how many you have.
Right.
Because they tried all three in this game. And I don't know if Cohn's the answer. I don't think he is. Buchner looked very green when they brought him in. Drew Pine definitely gave them a spark. The numbers aren't terrific for Drew Pine, but he definitely gave them something a little bit more, and maybe he's the guy now moving forward. Kelly implied as much in his post-game comments that he knows they need to like settle things down, and maybe since they don't have the playoff to go for at this point, and maybe they think they still do. I don't know. I don't think they're a playoff team. I'm hopeful that now that they've got this loss out of their system, they can kind of do the same thing you referenced with like the Oregon staff. Just take a look at where the line is at, where this team is at as an offense, and figure out like, where are we going with this thing? We got to pick a guy.
Yeah.
Got to pick a guy. So if you're a Notre Dame fan, the prevailing storyline out of this game is obviously going to be the offensive line. If you're a college football fan, the prevailing storyline is going to be, can Cincinnati make the playoff? And NBC showed the graphic like 1,000 times. Their win probability in every remaining game is very high.
Sure.
So my guess is that this is really only the tip of that iceberg. We're going to be talking about for months on end whether or not Cincinnati deserves to be in the playoff. And as we're going to get through all of these other games, the case for Cincinnati is getting stronger, Dan, isn't it?
It most certainly is. And Cincinnati did, even with some early offensive struggles, they did what good teams do, which is they forced turnovers, they rushed the passer, they took advantage of weakness, and they capitalized on short fields. Now, this wasn't an explosive Cincinnati offense, especially on the ground. Des Ridder made plays. It was Alec Pierce was quite impressive out wide, making plays and sort of lengthening the field for Cincinnati and keeping Notre Dame honest. But yeah, on the Notre Dame side, Notre Dame's fine. They're not great. That's okay. They're not great. And as long as Brian Kelly is treating his quarterbacks like, I don't know, like cheap lightning cables, where you're just like trying to plug and play. Like, oh man, my phone's not charging. Maybe this one will work. Maybe I'll switch the direction.
They did a few quarterback swaps in this game that made no sense. And Drew Brees, by the way, who I think is doing a very good job in his first year as a commentator, was utterly perplexed by some of these moves. He was perplexed.
And it was mid-drive, too. It wasn't even mid-drive. Like, this drive, this guy's coming out, this guy. Yeah,
it didn't really fit together. I listened a little bit to the radio coverage. I like Ryan Harris, and he was perplexed as well. They need to get away from this now. They need to kind of settle in and pick their guy. And my sense is that they will. But a good win for Cincinnati. We don't have to drone on about this any further. We will talk much more about the Bearcats now.
By the way, Sauce Gardner and MyJay Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
Sanders? Yeah. Ridiculous. Just a hell of a duo. MyJay is, there was like sort of a game, a pass rush game that he sort of stunted inside. It was great.
No, very good players on Cincinnati's team. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to the SEC.
Guess who just got murdered?
Alabama 42, Ole Miss 21.
What a day.
This was 35-0 early in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alabama sort of let off the gas. They dominated in the trenches. I don't think that's a bridge too far.
Oh,
they
killed
Ole Miss on the ground. Brian Robinson went for a 171 and four touchdowns. Lane Kiffin was aggressive in this game. He went for it on fourth down five times, only converted two of them. maybe a little hyper aggressive early with some of those calls.
I thought it was a perfect game plan, honestly.
Yeah.
Perfect game plan for what that team can do well. And Bud Elliott underscored this. I'll let you take over in a second, but just he went into the actual data and the numbers and formulas and found that on every single one of those occasions, going for it on fourth down gave Ole Miss a better chance of winning the game.
Yeah.
And so I don't fault Lane Kiffin at all for that approach, but it'll get you blown out more often, but it'll, you know, his words were you avoid losing close. Like punting would have had Ole Miss losing closer, which is no better than what, a loss is a loss. So no, I had no problem with the game plan, especially with how quickly they came out.
And they still almost covered. They were
for
down.
For whatever that's worth.
For whatever that's worth, they were down in a pretty serious hole and they came back to lose 42-21. Point spread was 14.5 at kick. So look, I admire the game plan. There's only so much you can say about Alabama at this point. The showing that they put out there on defense was nothing short of impressive. Ole Miss might be one of the top five offenses in the country.
Sure.
So for Bama to go out there and basically shut them down the way that they did and really only give up points when they let off the gas, it's damn impressive. We're out of superlatives. I agree with you.
Yeah.
If you're Lane and you're trying to win the game, you got to leave it all out in the field. And I don't think anybody can fault him for that. He referenced the analytics in his post-game comments.
Mm-hmm.
He said it. That's the analytics. I was playing the numbers. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. So 42-21, I was nothing short of stunned the way that Alabama held down this Ole Miss offense. And I think it's just a further testament to the fact that Alabama is maybe a little bit more vulnerable than they've been in recent years. But even that is not all that vulnerable. They're still damn good, and they're the number one team in the country for a reason.
Thankfully, Alabama does not have killers at receiver in the way that they did these past, whatever, 2 or 3 years. That they merely have really good players who aren't quite at the caliber as where the Tide have been. But no, smart play calling from Bill O'Brien. Ole Miss was dropping a ton into coverage, and they just ran and ran and ran, and Bryce Young made plays, was protected so admirably, shocker, from this Alabama offensive line. And like I mentioned, Will Anderson making plays up front and just completely harassing Ole Miss there. And look, Ole Miss is going to be fine. They're going to be an entertaining year. They're going to win games. But no, it was not meant to be with the ability from snap to snap and basically how mistake-free Alabama played. It just wasn't happening.
No, the only bit of news on the Alabama side that was discouraging, Jace McClellan.
Saw that.
Talented running back. Injured his knee. Be out for, quote, a while per Nick Saban. So we'll have to monitor that.
But yeah,
situation.
Jaleel Billingsley back and a weapon. Like, it's the universe evening out. Hopefully McClellan heals up and is okay.
In other SEC action.
Guess who just got
murdered?
Kings of Texas, huh?
Look, Ty, I appreciate the opportunity.
The Kings of Texas.
I do. But at least they weren't my lock of the week, which was another team that got murdered.
Who was your lock
of the
week?
That. Oh, Maryland.
Maryland, right, that's right. Maryland. Yeah.
I try to build the altar of Dan brick by brick. Sometimes you get some faulty materials. Sometimes,
materials have been hard to come by through the pandemic. So
that's
true. I hear you.
Yeah. Continue.
37-0, Georgia wins. This one was equally as ugly, maybe uglier than that Alabama game. The so-called Kings of Texas just got destroyed here. 162 yards of offense, zero turnovers, but 13 penalties for 101 yards, which is not a good way to win. And Georgia did all this playing Stetson Bennett and having him throw the football only, I think, 11 times.
Yeah,
something like
nice
that.
Pass to, I think it was Kenny McIntosh up the sideline. Set up something nice, but didn't really need Stetson Bennett to win this game at all.
Nope. JT Daniels was out with a lat injury, so it was Stetson Bennett. It didn't matter who was quarterback because Georgia gave five different running backs a total of 53 touches, and it was used to great avail. Bennett only had 72 yards passing, whatever. It was not a passing game. Georgia knew what it was in this game. They knew they could run. They knew they could win with the run, and they bottled up Arkansas. This was not the kind of game that was really much in doubt beyond the second quarter. You just sort of could sense the way things were going. Arkansas was trying everything it could, but the Georgia defense was really just a cut above. And we are now at the spot where the college football world around Alabama and Georgia, it's like they're in a gravitational bubble, Dan. The world around them is crumbling. There's mass chaos outside of that top two. But right. It does seem as if the top two would be a great year for the BCS because the top two is really rock solid.
I mean, I would include Wake in the conversation.
Right. Sure.
We're Wake watchers here. The undefeated streak continues. You're absolutely correct. It's very difficult to find that third or fourth team that you'll say, especially now that Ole Miss is not that team, with, you know, just the level of quarterback play. There is quite literally nobody who appears to be a threat to especially those two defenses. Stranger things have happened.
Maybe Florida.
We'll talk about Florida next,
but maybe Florida. I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult to actually assemble. I'm not going to play the Home Depot song once again. It's difficult to look at a squad and assemble a way in which a team could say, okay, if this happens and then this happens and there's a good matchup here, that's, you know, take your pick of undefeated teams, take your pick of one loss teams, you know, Michigan, like Penn State, Ohio State. No, not right now.
Yeah. Well, look, Arkansas, to get into this game as an undefeated team, to have Herbie and Fowler on the call in Athens, like given the depths of this program just a few short years ago, the fact that they are here now, that they had gotten into the top 10 going into this game, it is not lost on any of us. I mean, it's a huge accomplishment for Sam Pittman, and they have nothing but the world in front of them. It's been a really good season for Arkansas so far. It's not over yet. The schedule is tough. They will probably drop one or two more, or maybe more than that, the rest of the way. But the fact that they got into this game with such avail is, I think, incredibly encouraging for the future of this program. And Sam Pittman's doing a hell of a job. Just ran into a buzzsaw.
It's wild to say in October that outside of Alabama, there's no obvious for sure loss for Arkansas.
No.
Moving, right? It's Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State, LSU, and Mizzou. Like, those are all winnable games if certain things can happen appropriately. That's all.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The other games here, I'll mention these very quickly, and then we can circle back and pull out the things that were relevant to us. Kentucky takes it to Florida, 20-13. That was a big win for the Cats.
Mm-hmm.
We had Auburn. I talked about this game a little bit earlier, if only anecdotally. Auburn wins at LSU. They snapped their 10-game losing streak at Tiger Stadium. winning 24-19, a big game from Bo Nix. We'll talk about that.
Yep.
Mississippi State 26, Texas A&M 22. Vandy kicks a 31-yard field goal to give the Huskies their fifth loss of the season over the UConn Huskies. Mm-hmm. Tennessee with 62 in a big win over Mizzou, 62-24. And South Carolina, broken offense.
Mm-hmm.
Year one, Shane Beamer, broken offense.
Yep.
But 23-14 over Troy. Why don't we circle back to that Florida game, Dan?
Yes.
20-13. How do you feel about that game?
Especially sloppy in every facet for Florida. I mean, just the fact that the penalties were what they were, trying to win a game entirely with Emory Jones, both through the air and on the ground. It's going to be difficult against at least a decent enough defense, which is what I believe Kentucky to have. And Kentucky, through forcing turnovers and taking advantage of short fields and utilizing Wandale Robinson, whose electricity could power my house.
Mm-hmm.
Just that screen touchdown alone was so fun to watch.
He's
I
great.
Watched it over and over again. Chris Rodriguez made plays. And look, Will Levis, say what you will.
He's back,
didn't
baby.
Didn't lose Kentucky the game against a top 10 Florida team.
No.
And so a great, great win for Kentucky and Florida. A lot of soul searching in terms of what they can and can't do on offense. A lot to clean up. And, you know, the defense essentially did enough to win this game, but they didn't have it on offense. They just full on didn't.
I mentioned the game that Bo Nix had got mm-hmm. benched. What was it, like a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Time flies here in the
last
middle
game,
of the season, but talk about being a freaking legend in this game. 255 through the air, 74 on the ground. He just found a different gear. He was the reason they won. Their defense got better as the game wore on. At one point, they were down 13-0, I think, early in this game. It's tough to go on the road at night.
And
TJ Finley got
into the game, too. This was not we're fully confident in Bo Nix's abilities to begin this game. Yeah.
No, but Bo Nix found another level and was clearly able to elevate Auburn here to a really nice win on the road. Again, snapping a 10-game losing streak, which had really been a thorn in their side for quite some time. LSU now maybe trying to do some soul searching. 19 points against a good defense, but 19 points with this kind of talent.
Came out of the gate super impressively, especially Kayshawn Boutte. Like, just an incredible receiver. Max Johnson is fine. The LSU offensive line, LSU's ability to finish drives, LSU's ability to tackle Bo Nix, LSU's ability to close games. You know, they what do they have? The 13-0 lead pretty quickly?
Yeah.
LSU's fall off from 2 years ago is, I mean, I know they lost a ton after that national championship winning season, but incredible, unexpected, a twist to me, just because of the talent LSU has currently and will always have because of the in-state talent. And for Auburn to come out as impressively, for Bo Nix, I know the stat line isn't going to sing his praises, but the escapability and the playmaking ability across that offense, an offense that hasn't been great, but Jarquez Hunter, like Tank Bigsby didn't do much. Bo Nix willed this team to the finish line, and LSU far, far, far sloppier than they should be this far into Ed Orgeron's tenure.
I agree. It's a problem.
The offensive line is kind of a nightmare.
Final point here in the SEC before we jump over to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Bigger story for you. A&M losing again.
Mm-hmm.
Looking sort of lost on offense. Or Tennessee exploding in the manner that they did offensively. 683 yards, 62 points. This was 45-10 at half.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good story. I think the A&M one has a little bit more prominence given what we expected out of A&M. But as we texted back and forth a little bit yesterday, Tennessee is at least interesting adjacent, right?
Yeah, that was my phrasing. That's right. Yeah. I mean, Mizzou might be really bad.
Mizzou switched their defense for this game.
They switched their defense.
For this game. Well, they were playing something else. They decided going into this game, they were going to play a 3-3-5 instead. Did not work.
Yeah. Hendon Hooker looked great. The running game, Tyon, looked great. Yeah, Mizzou's not good. And Tennessee is interesting adjacent. I'd like to see them continue to do this against clearly lesser teams, but the growth from Tennessee is impressive thus far. That they're fighting. They nearly beat Pitt, which looks like, again, that's competitive adjacent. But no, I came away very impressed by the strides in year one that Tennessee looks to be taking. And as far as A&M, that was a winnable game. That was absolutely a winnable game. Now they're playing with a backup quarterback who was limited, and you have the safety at the end of things, and they seem to be leaning on the run a bit more, which was, you know, that's what Andy Staples talked about. A-Chain was making plays.
Yeah.
But Mississippi State made plays. Will Rogers was nearly perfect. I mean, I know he throws the ball 60 times or whatever. That's the offense. But he was dealing. He made some incredible throws. Spread the ball out really, really well. And I came away good for Mississippi State to go on the road. That was in College Station, right?
Yep.
Winnable game for A&M. But ultimately, Mississippi State hanging on and making plays on both sides of the ball. I'm still high on State. I don't know why, but I still am. So, yeah, A&M struggling. I saw somebody posted that, like, Jimbo and Sumlin's record are the same through 40. I don't know. I don't think you can lose that game if you're A&M at home with the game in the grasp. It just, I don't know. It feels like a lost opportunity and probably now a lost season for the Aggies.
Yeah, not getting much out of the passing game with Zach Calzada.
He did make plays, though.
Made some plays.
He came on at times, for sure. Made, like, legit SEC starter plays, but just too far.
It's just not consistent. It's not consistent. All right, let's jump over to the Big Ten. Let me read off the scores, and then we'll circle back here. Michigan 38, Wisconsin 17. Penn State blanks Indiana 24-0. Iowa rolls one up on Maryland 51-14. Ohio State 52-13 over Rutgers. Nebraska 56-7 with 657 total yards in a win over Northwestern. Yeah. Michigan State, not much defense in this one, but
48-31.
They were up 42-16 at half, ran away with that one. Minnesota knocks off Purdue, and Illinois beats Charlotte by 10. Where do you want to start?
I guess Michigan-Wisconsin, right?
Michigan-Wisconsin. It was giving me flashbacks to Notre Dame-Wisconsin a little bit.
Sure, I'm sure.
Close for a while and sort of broke open. Michigan tweaked their strategy a little bit. Coming into this game, they were running at about a 74% clip. And if you go back and listen to some of what Harbaugh said post-game, they really wanted to be a little bit more balanced. This is more 60-40.
Mm-hmm.
And Cade McNamara threw it 28 times, which was, I believe, the most he's thrown it all season. He looked pretty good. He's been very careful with the football. I know that's one of the things that they like about him. There may be a ceiling there, but he just doesn't turn the ball over, which is definitely useful. He didn't last year. He doesn't have any picks so far this season either.
It's great.
So the offense, we can talk about the Michigan offense, but I think performing at a pretty good level. On the Wisconsin side, just another tough one for their offense, man. To add insult to injury, both Graham Mertz and Jake Ferguson went down. Mertz had to go to the hospital for observation. Thankfully, he was released. Ferguson also got hurt in the third quarter. I haven't seen much in the way of an update as to how long he'll be out, if at all. But just no running back had over 19 yards on the ground for Wisconsin. I'm looking at this in real time. I'm watching the game on one screen. I'm looking at the box score on another. And I'm trying to remember back to a time when Wisconsin had this much trouble running the football. And week one, we saw the game against Penn State. We thought, you know, maybe Malusi would give them that burst, but that has not really worked out over the last couple weeks. And we saw a little bit of Jalen Berger in this game, and I like Jalen Berger, but again, just the numbers aren't there in a way that it's giving them the production that they need to take this offense to another level. Wisconsin now in a very precarious spot. Then they've lost 8 of their last 13 games. This was their 8th straight loss to a ranked team. So they definitely, speaking of soul searching, have some work to do to figure out the state of their offense. The defense, for its part, is I think still performing very admirably. They just can't do it all. They need some support on the offensive side. And eventually Michigan just leaned on them until they fell over and they got their 38 points. So great win for Michigan on the road, man.
Yeah, I mean, basically in every phase, Michigan was impressive. They protected Cade McNamara. You mentioned the lack of turnovers in the passing game for Michigan, but Wisconsin was not able to get home on Cade McNamara like they were in a losing effort against Notre Dame last week. So that speaks well of the development up front for Michigan. Michigan didn't do anything really on the ground offensively, but we saw the ability to take advantage of mistakes and shorter fields and Wisconsin's offense just not being able to do anything.
Yeah.
It hangs their own defense out to dry. And eventually, you know, the cracks are going to form. And, you know, Michigan took advantage like good teams do. It's been a pleasant surprise to me, the steps that Michigan has taken on both sides of the ball. Now, especially on defense, right? They played Wisconsin as a good defense should. We saw on offense J.J. McCarthy come in for Michigan. Like, you just... This is the brick by brick performance, Ty, right? By the way, Joel Klatt likes brick by brick.
Oh, that's Joel Klatt loves brick by brick.
Oh my God.
You love that one JJ McCarthy pass, didn't you?
It's tantalizing for a school that hasn't had, look, I, as a Michigan man myself, marrying sure. into a Michigan family.
Of course.
It's tantalizing to see a more complete and a more explosive Michigan offense paired with a defense. Aiden Hutchinson may have been the best player on the field yesterday. That's just there's a lot to like, maybe not love, but like moving forward, because Wisconsin is a deeply flawed team. And just still very strange to see a Wisconsin team struggling right out of the gate. This is when we're talking scripted plays. We're talking game plan. We're talking, OK, force Michigan to adjust to X and Y. And Wisconsin just doesn't make teams do that.
No.
The offense seems, and I don't think it's fully on Graham Mertz. I don't think it's fully on the offensive line. I don't think it's fully on the coaches. I just think there's flaws all around right now, and Wisconsin is bad at fixing, is bad at figuring it out. And it's not going to be a 2021 thing. I presume Wisconsin is going to get a lot better quickly. I don't know how exactly, but there's just too much infrastructure there for them to just now be a bad team. So great win for Michigan. Absolutely great win on the road. The first time this is sprayed everywhere already. The first time Michigan has won as an underdog under Jim Harbaugh. The first time they've won in Camp Randall since 2001. Ty, what were you doing in 2001?
Who the hell knows? I was golfing.
You had been at your job for only 5-10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what
else. Serious day job. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for them.
Nice step forward. And Michigan should be undefeated. I mean, it's Nebraska, who looked better. We can get to that in a minute. And Northwestern, who looks like bottom dweller right now in the Big Ten. It should very well be a 7-0 Michigan team against State. Against State, yeah.
The schedule does toughen up the last 5 weeks of the season.
Totally.
But they're going to be, I would presume, a top 10 team when the new AP poll comes out, given the losses that occurred in front of them. Maybe right on the fringes of it, but Michigan's going to be there before long.
Michigan's not a really good team, but they're winning games, which
they are. They're winning
good
games convincingly, and that stands for something. Speaking of which, let's talk about Iowa and Penn State. Iowa and Penn State are now on a collision course. Penn State's going to be 3. Iowa's going to be 4 in the newest AP poll, whenever that comes out. Iowa, the game on Friday night was a freaking car crash. That game was a car crash, especially in the second quarter. What a horrible turn of events for Maryland. Everything that could go wrong did. They had 7 turnovers. They had 10 penalties. They had Dante Dimas go down with an injury. Yeah. He had to be carted off. His leg looked like a noodle. Fox conveniently showed it from about 8 different angles. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it was a disappointing showing for Maryland on a Friday night at home with everybody fired up, it was a really emphatic statement to go on the road against a team that I still think is pretty good and win 51-14 in the manner that they did. A lot of that was gift wrap by Maryland, but there is something to be said for cashing in on the opportunities when they're handed to you. And on the Penn State side, another really good defensive showing. This game is coming week, 4 p.m. on Fox in Iowa between Penn State and Iowa, 3-4. It's going to be a defensive clash. It's always a defensive clash, but that is going to be the case this year. Penn State's defense has gotten better almost every game. It feels like they got much, much, much better in this game as well. Just gave Indiana nothing to work with. They also may have hurt Michael Penix for like the 18th straight year. I have not seen if, in fact, he did separate his shoulder or not, but he took a hit. Bad luck for the kid. He was not right to begin with. I think we acknowledge as much, but Penn State's defense was swarming. Offensively, you know, like, could have been better. The numbers are fine. Jahan Dotson had a good game. Jahan Dotson and Sean Clifford broke a record set by Todd Blackledge and Keith Jackson, the most quarterback to wide receiver touchdowns in the history of the program. Nice. Blackledge was on the call, which was somewhat coincidental. But, you know, I mean, there are parts of the offense that look really good. Still not convinced they have the running game figured out, but did what they needed to do and played a really good sound defensive game to blank Indiana 24-0.
Whoever is evaluating and developing receivers at Penn State, I know it was Josh Gattis for a while there back then before he went to Alabama, now Michigan. What a job that human is doing. Because over the past few years, I mean, it's not even just Jahan Dotson, right? It's the tight ends. It's Parker Washington these last couple years. KJ Hamler. Like, they've done a really good job developing these go-to guys, especially without necessarily having great quarterbacks the entire time. So awesome for Penn State. The encouraging thing, you mentioned the defense and the job that they did, which for sure was very good. The encouraging thing for me was Penn State running the ball.
You think?
Especially up front. Yeah. With Kevon Lee, just in terms of how much easier it'll make life for the offense against the better teams. And I'm not saying Kevon Lee's going to, you know, rush for 6 yards a carry against teams like Iowa or Ohio State, something like that. But if you can keep defenses honest a little bit and make play action a little bit scarier with some of the guys Penn State lines up, I think it's significant.
It's significant, and it is kind of the missing link. I'm still not totally convinced that you can lean exclusively on Sean Clifford to win a big game for you.
Totally.
And to have that complement on the ground, I think, is uber important. The reason that I kind of recoil a little bit and why I'm hesitant is because we still don't know who the primary back is, if that's a thing that exists at Penn State, because they have a very crowded stable of running backs. All of them have different skill sets.
Kevon Lee's a big boy.
But how they use them and when they use them, that identity within the identity of their offense is a bit of a mystery at the moment. So if they can sort that out, and if it's something 3 weeks from now that it feels like we can rely a little bit more consistently on, then I'll be right there with you. I'm just not there
totally
yet.
No, I mean, it's what they should have been able to do against a team like Indiana, who is totally decent. But yeah, for them to carve out and grind out some yards on the ground and some of the bigger plays that they did, I think it can only speak volumes if they're able to do at least some respectable percentage of the same against the better teams on their schedule. And as for Iowa, my lock of the week, Maryland, did not come home for me.
No.
And Iowa fans were very happy to remind me. And you know what, Ty? Not only am I freely admitting, like, man, I leaned into the enthusiasm of home dogs and a Friday night on the road. Like, I leaned into all of it. And here's what I give to Iowa fans now. Punt, punt, interception, field goal, touchdown, 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 fumble, touchdown, interception, touchdown, punt, field goal, interception, touchdown, punt, field goal, touchdown, touchdown, interception, punt, 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 interception, downs, in.
You loaded the Dvorak up on your new sound pad, didn't you?
On the board, baby.
Yeah.
On the board.
Going full digital experience here. No, look.
By the way, and the play that stood out to me, because Iowa doesn't need Spencer Petras to throw for 1,000 yards for them to win games. Though it is, do you know how hard it is for Iowa to score 34 points in a first half? Do you know how difficult that is? The long touchdown he threw to Tyler Goodson was on my favorite play in NCAA football, where it's the running back sort of squirting out and looking like he's just going to go out to the flat and then cutting back in.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful,
The arrow play, right?
The arrow play. Yep. Wonderful.
No. And Goodson's got moves. You know, for people who don't watch a lot of Iowa football, he's got really good moves.
No, he's a strong open field player.
And it's not like the North-South guys that maybe you're accustomed to seeing from Iowa in the past. He's got some hops, man. So,
yep.
All right. I don't have much else to add around the Big Ten. The only thing I will do is issue of Mea Culpa. I saw a bad headline that said that Kyle McCord was going to play for Ohio State.
Yes.
So I'd imagine there was some surprise out there when you saw the box score that CJ Stroud actually played and went 17 of 23 for 330 yards and 5 touchdowns. Clearly the shoulder is rested at this point. It is good. It's solid.
Yeah.
And they went on the road and they took care of business here against Rutgers.
Yes, he basically had a perfect game, and yeah. Ohio State doesn't really have a legit challenge until Halloween, right? That's when the Penn State game is.
Yep.
So good for Ohio State for getting its act together. Nebraska stomped Northwestern largely on the ground. They just ran all the hell over Northwestern. I think somebody tweeted us that Mike Henkowitz is a retroactive dude for what he was able to do with the Northwestern defense that Jim O'Neill is not necessarily doing right now. Minnesota with a late win against Purdue, and way to come back, especially after you called them the worst FBS team.
I believe I did. Minnesota,
that might have been on our Solid Saturday show, solidsaturday.com. So really nice, you know, weathering a ton through the air from Purdue, but Minnesota able to get the job done. I think David Bell had a nice game for Purdue.
With the lack of coverage about Minnesota football right now, my comment could have been bulletin board material.
It could have been.
It may have risen to that level. That's how bad it's gotten.
Both of these teams, look, they've got a nice schedule ahead of them. I mean, just that there's a lot left, right? They're both 3-2 and are 1-1 in conference. So it's very early for both of them. They can, you know, hopefully worm their way to a couple bowl games. We'll see.
All right. Let's go over to the Big 12. Again, I'm going to read through scores. We'll double back and talk about what jumped out to us. We had Oklahoma 37, K-State 31. Before I forget. Backdoor cover, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Backdoor cover for K-State, 37-31, your final score. Oklahoma wins. Oklahoma State, another impressive defensive showing, 24-14 over Baylor at home. We had Texas knocking off TCU, 32-27. Texas was favored by 4.5 at kickoff, so somebody got that number right. Mm-hmm. We had Iowa State big, 59-7 over Kansas. And Texas Tech and West Virginia. Texas Tech jumped out to a 17-0 lead. West Virginia came storming back. They had 17 straight points in the third quarter. But ultimately, Tech wins this one by a 23-20 score. And they're one win away from already hitting their Vegas over-under. They're very quiet, 4-1. So good for Matt Wells. What jumped out to you in this week of Big 12 action, Dan?
Well, just with that game specifically, again, for Texas Tech to win with the backup quarterback and Henry Columbia, really nice. It would be nice if either one of these teams were a little bit more consistent in terms of the offense generated, because West Virginia came on strong at the end. But did West Virginia score points in the first half?
No.
I don't think they did.
No.
So, yeah, we just, I don't know, to come out that flat against a team, a beatable team in a winnable game, it's got to be disappointing for ears, to say the least. Bijan Robinson, good at football.
Man.
That stood out to me.
Sark is now doing, I'm hopeful that Sark is doing what Tom Herman should have done. And just giving the ball to his best player.
You hammer him hard for this, but yeah.
Give the ball to your best player. He had 216 and 2 touchdowns on the ground. I think a lot like Baylor, who we can talk about here momentarily, Texas is still working on that second pitch. Still trying to figure out what.
TCU did a good job against Casey Thompson and the sort of more aerial attack.
They did a good job, and it's definitely more pronounced with Baylor trying to figure out its other dimensions on offense. But Texas, I like that they went to Bijan Robinson here. We had talked in the buildup to this game that TCU's having some issues on defense, and Bijan just ran through him. He had a huge game. And Texas now 4-1 going into an Oklahoma game that's. Seems gettable. I don't know. Oklahoma is by no means impervious.
If I told you, I'm really worried about the team that has a lot of talent, that's been inconsistent offensively in bigger spots, who am I talking about here tonight?
All right. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Let's talk about the Oklahoma game.
Yeah. By the way, just with regard to TCU, Zach Evans, really, really strong as well. And could be one of the better backs in the country if maybe he was in a better offense. I don't know.
Well,
I'm still worried about TCU, big picture.
Oklahoma won by 6. It was not that close of a game. I mean, it wasn't a blowout runaway train effort from Oklahoma, but K-State returned a kickoff when they were down 13 with only a few minutes left. They went for the onside kick. They got a couple cracks at it, but no bueno in the end. Oklahoma wins. Kansas State covers with that late kickoff return. I thought Oklahoma looked better.
Definitely.
Spencer Rattler only missed three throws. I hope we see more Kennedy Brooks this season because he was the man in this game. It doesn't quite show up in the box score. He only had 91 yards, but really ran hard, gave the offense a physical presence that I think it desperately needs right now. The one bit of critical feedback here, and I'm sure there are a thousand other things you could say about Oklahoma.
Did you not like Spencer Rattler's jump pass randomly in the middle of the field?
It was,
because I did.
It was sort of out of nowhere, wasn't it?
I liked it. Yeah.
Oklahoma did not really get home much against Skylar Thompson.
No.
And that was curious to me because I remembered in the back of my mind Chris Kleiman's comments about whether or not Skylar Thompson could play coming back from injury.
Right.
And he was concerned about whether he could run.
Yeah, well, who knows the honesty involved in the early week statement? Because it was something like, to be honest with you, physically, I can't see it. I can't see it.
I don't know if he can run. You got to be able to run. They couldn't get to him.
He stayed pretty upright, actually. You're right.
He stayed upright. They did not get a whole lot of pressure on him. But outside of that, look, a good win. This is a good win. It was on the road. They needed to get the monkey off their back. And I did think that Spencer Rattler looked a lot better in this game. He was much more comfortable.
Yeah, Oklahoma's schedule is pretty nice, all things considered, moving forward. Texas on a neutral site, TCU at home, at Kansas, at Baylor, Texas Tech at home. You know, the at Baylor one and at Oklahoma State for the Bedlam game, they're going to be tough. But to get Iowa State and TCU at home, it's pretty good.
Oklahoma State 24, Baylor 14. Again, it's the Oklahoma State defense stepping up. Should not be surprised by that. At this point, it seems like they've done it every single game so far. Baylor was forced to punt on their first eight possessions in this football game. And in particular, Oklahoma State keyed on the run. They knew that that's what Baylor wanted to do. They keyed on the run and it worked really well. It forced Baylor entirely off its schedule offensively and it kept them in check for a good chunk of the game. Baylor tried their part in the second half to come back and make it a game. They weren't able to do so. If you're a Baylor fan, I think you feel like you had your chances here. I think you feel like the game was there for you. They were not able to capitalize on some of the opportunities that were presented to them in this football game. You felt like you had your chances. Plan ultimately on offense, probably a little too rigid. Like I said, they're still working on that second pitch. And they may get there. But it's just not there yet.
They just came into the game clearly not trusting Gary Bohannon. In the first half, the offense was off the field way too quickly, way too often in that first half. And I don't know if it's a trust thing. I don't know if it was a specific game plan thing that didn't work out and they didn't have, as you like to call it, a second pitch. But look, Baylor's still what, 4-1? Yeah, they're 4-1 still. All things considered, good place to be. Stillwater at night is nearly impossible if Oklahoma State has a pulse. But still, yeah, a lot left on the table for Baylor. Got to be disappointed.
I'm going to go to the Pac-12 here very quickly.
We don't need to.
Arizona State knocks off UCLA 42-23. Oregon State knocks off Washington 27-24 on a chip shot at the gun. Washington State wins 21-6 over Cal. And USC goes to Colorado and takes it to the bus by a 37-14
score. On the ground, no less.
On the ground. Yeah. On the ground. So we'll quickly talk about the ASU-UCLA game. I stayed awake and watched this whole thing. I watched the whole game here.
Good for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really a badge of honor.
Right.
UCLA got shut out in the second half. ASU scored 18 unanswered. A good game from Jaden Daniels. A good game from him. The storyline surrounding Daniels, I don't know if people know this, but his grandfather passed away on Friday. So to go out there and put in the kind of effort that he did on a Saturday night in a really tough spot, good for him. I hope he's doing okay. We knew going into this that the UCLA defense, pass defense in particular, was going to be a problem, and it was again. They gave up a handful of big plays here. That's why they end up giving up 42 points to Arizona State. So still a pretty good game on the ground for them, statistically speaking. DTR had his moments, you know, where it's like, which version of DTR are we going to get here? But ASU with a really big win, they were a 3-point dog going into this game. And ultimately, I think it was Jaden Daniels in the passing game that put them over the top.
Yeah, UCLA had this game if they wanted it. DTR is not an answer for winning 10 games for a pro, even in the Pac-12. Like, he just struggled, and decision making, and the defense gave up way too many big plays for sure. It was Ricky Pearsall, I think, was the one who really capitalized. There was a really nice sluggo route I saw from Jaden Daniels, who throws a really pretty, if not kind of Tecmo Super Bowl-ish, like ball disappears. Like, and is in the air for, like, there's a hang time element.
Right. He just runs backwards to buy the time and then throws it.
Yeah. There's just, it works though. It absolutely works. So I can't criticize it. No, really, there was some smart play calling from ASU. There was that, I saw the weird play that DTR had like a 30 or 40 yard run with, it was just like a 2-on-2, like everybody else spread out. There was an unusual formation that worked out for UCLA. But yeah, way too many big plays allowed for UCLA, and in a completely bonkers, I don't even know if it's wide open, but it's nothing week to week. Nothing really matters in the Pac-12. What one week means nothing.
It's the ACC West.
Yeah. ACC West. Weird. Other things that stood out to me in the conference, Washington scoring immediately and looking crazy sharp against Oregon State in what I assume is a scripted drive to open the game. And then not scoring and not getting into the end zone again until 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. What are we doing?
John Donovan is back, baby. He is back.
What are we doing? And then they are able to score and it's close. And then, as you mentioned, Oregon State wins. I mean, for Chance Nolan to basically do nothing through the air for this Oregon State team, they ran the ball well. But to come away with that win, it was in Corvallis, I believe.
Yep.
Oregon State now stands alone.
Your first place Beavers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for them, man. Good for the Beavs, given the depth where they were with Gary Anderson. Look, didn't see it coming myself, but look, any team that's competitive and consistent to whatever degree in the Pac-12, I'll take.
Yeah. And USC, by the way, USC ran one up on Colorado. Colorado does not have much offense outside of Jarek Broussard. But Keaton Slovis was back. He had a good game. Keontae Ingram looked good on the ground. Drake London's a walking highlight reel.
Of course.
He had at least two catches in this game that, if you go back and watch SportsCenter, whatever they call their Plays of the Week segment now, you'll see Drake London a couple times because he, again, had more highlight reel plays, 9 for 130. He will be playing on Sundays at some point in the very near future.
Breaking news, Wazoo didn't blow a lead.
Hey, okay.
Wazoo. Jaden Delora gets the start. Jarek Garantano not playing. And I think, Calvin Jackson had a ridiculous touchdown catch. Look it up if you haven't seen it yet. Good for Wazoo for getting on the board in the conference. And yeah, Cal is 1-4. I don't know where Cal goes from here. It's hard to see them. I can pull up the Cal schedule. I don't think we have a lot of people deeply concerned about the Cal Bears listening. But right now, I mean, they have Colorado and Arizona on the schedule, thankfully. But otherwise, this is a rough squad.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, let's close out with the ACC, Dan. We had Clemson 19-13 over Boston College. This one came down to the wire.
Would you take Dennis Grossell as the Notre Dame starting quarterback? I would for Oregon. Just so you know. Just so you know.
NC State 34, Louisiana Tech 27. We had Virginia over Miami on Thursday night. The super doink from Andres Borregales that would have won the game for Miami. How much golf have you played? Have you played golf out there, like on a course?
No, not once.
Sometimes you just really hit a tree. And I don't mean the top of the tree with the leaves and the branches and you're looking for the ball. Sometimes you hit it square in the bark and either the ball drops and goes straight down or it comes searing right back at your head. That is what Borregales did with this field goal when he doinked it off the upright. It didn't go to the side. It was solid. It was straight on and it went straight back.
Yeah, there was punch to it.
30-28. Virginia wins the game. We had Pitt. 52-21 over Georgia Tech. We had North Carolina by 31 over their rival Duke. Congrats to Florida State on their first win of the season, 33-30 over Syracuse. Nice game for Jordan Travis, both through the air and on the ground. Mm-hmm. And finally, Wake Forest, Dan. Look, you can't spell Wake Forest without five W's. You heard the call.
Correct.
37.
Weird ending. Yeah.
34. A fun back and forth game. They win over Louisville, but Wake is 5-0, man. It's happening. It's all happening.
Yeah. I mean, to win at the end, and Louisville was tough enough, but man, Wake Forest, 5-0. You're right.
Their next three games, you want to talk about schedules? At Syracuse, at Army, home against Duke.
Army's tough. Army's going to be a challenge.
Perhaps.
Corey Roberson, by the way, one of the better receivers in the country. In a year without real go-to receivers, he is quite impressive. NC State hung on, which we indicated it definitely was. I think we said it was an open-faced letdown look ahead. They have a bye week next week, if memory serves. Clemson, sloppy, but gutted it out, I guess. I watched all of this game in chunks here and there, but continue.
I thought in general, DJU looked a little better.
They looked more comfortable.
They definitely took more advantage of him on the ground, which was good. The accuracy is still kind of shaky. I don't know what happened there. Kind of shaky. The line, kind of shaky. Okay. And I know I read some of the Clemson sites. I mean, they're screaming about the receiving core.
They hate the receivers.
Screaming about the receiving core.
Yeah,
right
no
now.
Justin Ross. Yeah, obviously.
And so that's going to be a thing. But man, what a weird thing to see the Clemson crowd kind of going crazy after barely beating, hanging on to beat BC. Dennis Grozel, by the way, cut through them like a hot knife through butter on that final drive, would be game winning drive until he fumbled it away.
Yeah.
But with the way that they had momentum on that final drive, there was almost no doubt that they were going to score a touchdown had it not been for the turnover that ended the game. He marched down the field. They had a shot to win this game, despite the fact that they're playing with a backup and they don't have near the talent that Clemson has. Jeff Hafley can coach. He had them in this game. It was there. They just made a dumb mistake down the stretch.
Well, he also almost threw the game away via interception in the end zone as well. And it went through, I think also, it was Venables.
It was Venables. Yeah. Yeah.
Through his hands. So they got fortunate that they got another chance, but they squandered that opportunity. Clemson has a lot of work to do. Win your clunkers, though. That's where we're at with Clemson right now, though. That I don't remember what the spread is, but I'm positive BC covered.
15.5.
So 6 points. Win your clunkers. They survived. The crowd seemed super into it. They got some false starts. So, survive in advance. I suppose the expectations are, I guess, just win as many as you can, given the limitations on offense this year.
We will come to a point, by the way, with Clemson, like we will with Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Where the point spreads will overcorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Make the lines far too low for those teams, and there will be incredible value on them at some point this season. I don't know when that is, but my hunch is that it is coming for both those schools. So we'll have
Clemson
to keep our
Pitt
eye
in
on that.
3 weeks, something like that, the 23rd, and Clemson Wake. Right around Thanksgiving. Those are the big ones left right now for Clemson to overcome.
Any other games that you want to mention? We're through the Power Five. What else happened?
So BYU has a quarterback hurt, but they're able to hang on against Utah State. Fresno State goes down, Tyler.
Went down to Hawaii.
They go down to Hawaii. Jake Haener threw for a bajillion yards, but had a bunch of picks in the red zone. Real ugly picks, so...
Yep,
Fresno State, a team that I really enjoyed watching and still will enjoy watching. They go down. Navy beats UCF, of course, down Dylan Gabriel. And so given Navy's deficiencies and drama behind the scenes with the coaching staff, I suppose good for them. Nevada did a terrific job against Boise State on the road. Carson Strong didn't do much, but didn't have to because they ran the ball really well. Do you know how many yards Boise was held to on the ground? 3 on 35 carries, if you're counting sack yardage, whatever, because it's Hank Bachmeier 10 for -68. But even still, Nevada's defense showed up on the road. Good for Nevada, who are now 3-1. The Wolfpack, just a team to be reckoned with, Ty. You know how I feel, and I love my Mountain West football. Other meaningful action, that you mentioned Illinois over Charlotte. That was, I think, kind of a comeback situation for Illinois. We didn't really talk too much about North Carolina, but a nice win over a struggling Duke team. Temple taking down Memphis.
Yeah, man. How'd that happen?
I don't know. Dwan Mathis, though, made plays.
How did that
Georgia
happen?
Transfer.
Good Lord.
FAU takes it to FIU. So there's that. East Carolina, don't look now, but in Holton Ahlers' 44th year at ECU, they comfortably beat Tulane. I did see Miami of Ohio. I'm seeing it right now. Miami of Ohio over Central Michigan. I believe Miami of Ohio scored more against Cincinnati. Chuck Martin, former Notre Dame offensive coordinator, did better against the Bearcats than the current Notre Dame. Ohio finally gets a win, be it against terrible Akron. Kent State, who has had an atrocious non-conference. I think, did Kent State have both Iowa and Texas A&M?
Yes.
That's a tough road. That's a tough road. SMU, undefeated. Tanner Mordecai.
Yep.
Come on. Yep. 5-0. Comfortable win against South Florida. Who does? I'll look up SMU's schedule in a moment. Yeah, Ball State did beat Army, so I called Army tough, but they didn't do much against Ball State. I have not watched that game in detail at all yet. I'm trying to look at other action that's at all. San Jose State, they haven't lost. It looks like at home they had a tough road, but they beat New Mexico State, who's kind of a disaster. UTEP, baby. 4-1 UTEP. Do you know how hard it is to win in El Paso if you are the team based in El Paso?
Right.
They are now 4-1. So that's, I think it's Dana Dimmel, the Kansas State, former Kansas State assistant who's running that program. So otherwise, I mean, Lehigh is really bad. I don't know if you want to get into detailed Patriot versus Ivy League versus Ivy League, but 34-0. Yale's come out on top. By the way, Fordham and Lafayette in a bit of a shootout, 42-41 Fordham on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Bucknell wins the Battle of the Nellies. Harvard comfortably beats the Crusaders. Colgate did the unthinkable.
Wow, they went to multi-sport field.
They went to multi-sport field and they come away with a W. They're going to be talking about this one for generations. I think that's the extent. I've got a few dudes that people submitted via Twitter if we want to get into that.
By the way, SMU at Cincinnati, November the 20th. Mark that one down. That should be a fun game. Yeah, let's do dudes. Let's do it. Where's it at? Where's my sound? Who we got?
I mean, just the Iowa defense. Bo Nix was absolutely a dude. Drake London, granted it was against Colorado, but Kenny Pickett just putting it on another ACC team. This time it was Georgia Tech. I mean, we should also mention Jordan Addison. The receiving core is really nice there. Will Rogers for Mississippi State. Jalen Carter, of course, for Georgia. I mean, the Georgia defense just smothering, but Jalen Carter got in there, I believe, on offense as well, the defensive lineman, and just the boa constrictors that make up the Georgia defense. Tyon Evans for Tennessee ran really, really
well. Love that name. Wish my name were Tyon.
Tyon. It can be.
Wish my name were Tyon.
Yeah, Tyon Hildenbrandt. Bijan Robinson, I was going to be retired soon. Otherwise, I don't know. I didn't make up a list myself. I mean, the usual suspects. I don't know if you have anybody you want to add to the mix.
I'll just throw in our boy Dylan for Cutting Reverbs at 4:30 after a crushing loss. That's
huge.
Tough. That's tough. Yeah. Well, look, I wish the week were better for our teams. But that being said, it is always fun to go through this catharsis, if you will, of listening to Reverbs and talking it all out and getting the views from the Verballerhood. Again, if you go on out to the verballers.com website, you can check in on our Patreon and see what we have to offer. You can get these shows early. You get access to this stream. You get access to the Discord server where we've just got a teaming community of great college football fans who gather
you
and talk about the
games. Veterinary advice, did you not?
I got veterinary advice. The pup was limping randomly, and it freaked me the hell out. Freaked me out, and we had a very kind soul in there who consulted some veterinary services in his or her family. And help me out. So that was helpful. It's a good community. And I'm proud to be a part of it. I'm proud that it's in our name. So verballers.com is where you can find out more about that. The dog is fine, by the way. She stopped limping. case anyone was wondering.
Good.
But she took the week off
on all fours.
Yeah, she took the week off from making puppy picks, and we're going to come back at it next week for Iowa Penn State.
Love it. I love to hear it. Maybe I'll get some picks from the solid toddler, because honestly, yesterday was a, what do we call it going in? Something's got to give Saturday. My picks were not good.
Mine were terrible.
I might, for this coming week, so it would be the week six preview, I might take, you go the opposite, right? You figure out what your gut says and you just go the opposite.
If every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
I have the sound on the board and ready to go. Yeah.
Not that it would have come true for my picks this week, but I'm going to go with, see, I tend to think I overthink things, which I know, haha, you know, maybe not. I'm going to do my best to underthink this week's picks. I'm going to do my best to just, maybe I'll just bash my head against a wall, take a shot of something and be like, I don't know, Iowa seems better than Maryland. I'm going to go with Iowa. I don't know. That's I'm going to underthink this week's picks. Right. I'm ready for it.
All right. Well, one more time, don't forget to go on out to solidverbal.com.
Yes.
We are going to be selling t-shirts again. So if you didn't get in on the pre-order, they're going to cost a few bucks more, but we do have some shirts that are available. Go to solidverbal.com, look for the big yellow banner at the very top of the screen, and that is how you can get access to the limited supply of additional shirts that are available. Buy them now while supplies last. Once they're done, they're done.
Do you have yours yet? I don't have mine. All I've heard is that they're skyrocketing to the tops of people's rotations and very comfortable and very sharp.
People have been sending us the pictures of the shirts. They look awesome. Yeah. I'm told they're great quality. They're very comfortable. We should be getting ours this week.
Okay, good.
So maybe we'll wear them on stream at some point here over the next couple days.
Correct. That's all I have.
For that guy up there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, thanks so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show, for calling in and giving us your feedback at 408-VERBAL-1. Don't forget to like the show out on YouTube and subscribe to the channel. Don't forget to follow along on all of our social media channels. And of course, tell your friends to subscribe as well. We've got a great community of college football fans, and we are excited for the week six that is ahead, Dan. We'll talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.